Live and direct, you're tuned into the Bro Diallo Show, broadcasting straight out of the sanctuary hypocrisy that is the city of Chirac, state of Illinois. Today is July 25th in the year of your Lord, 2018. And it's a beautiful, sunny, and crispy morning in Chicago, I tell you what. But there are several major traffic accidents. Man, it was a crawl here, but I made it. We did it, Chicago. Y'all so happy, man. I'm listening to, it's so interesting to hear how everybody, you know, yesterday, I don't know if y'all been following that whoremonger, scumbag, corrupt president, Trump, that white folks elected, white women, 53%, a majority, a plurality of white women, elected the pussy grabber. And although people are mad because there's a lot going on with this Trump presidency in the black community, amongst black folks, because a lot of enlightened, a lot of conscious, a lot of engaged, a lot of African people that I fully respect stood in principled opposition to Barack Obama. And it wasn't a good 8 years. I mean, I felt even organizations that I've worked with, that I've been affiliated with, organizations that I've committed my time to for the interests of the black community that, you know, I helped build within. I helped to build up and to sustain individuals that I thought were my allies in the revolutionary struggles, icons. Like Dr. Leonard Jeffries and some of y'all icons. They not mine, but they y'all icons, and I can't deny them their icon status, like Minister Louis Farrakhan. All of these individuals in 2008 came out on behalf of Donald Trump. They came out in behalf of Barack Obama. And people who I thought were anti-imperialist, organizations that I thought represented, that were, you know, at least nationalist, if not pan-Africanist, if not revolutionary, at least nationalist, came out. And even the organization that I worked within, that wasn't, you know, that was, you know, one of the most functional black organizations in Kansas City at the time, came out and endorsed Barack Obama. And there were too many people, Dr. Marimba Ani, Ankh, I ain't forgot you when you were out in 2007 wearing that Obama Nation, we'll play on the word abomination shirt in the African festival, and everybody was cutting their eyes at you. And so, anyway, after 8 years of a lot of black people, a lot of relationships were broken, a lot of family members were kicking out members like, you don't support my president, you don't support Obama, I don't want nothing to do with you. Families were broken up. So between 2007, really 2016, in 2006, when Obama first emerged on the national stage in a real way, and started his exploratory committee for the White House when George W. Bush was still in office. So between 2006 or 2008 to 2016, so for like 10 years, a lot of black people were, and a significant number of politically engaged black people. And then here's another thing us politically engaged black people have to deal with. There were black people who never gave a damn about politics. You know, so before 2006, before 2008, I remember going, working on political campaigns for trying to get revolutionaries, conscious, black nationalists, socialists on the Kansas City School Board. We were successful on the Kansas City City Council. I remember trying to get going working with my man Rich when he was trying to get an alternate congressperson elected. They lost, but, you know, for Major Owens, a true representative of the people elected. You know, so being engaged in politics, studying politics, trying to develop non-governmental policies, you know, trying to push, prod, you know, lobby these black bureaucrats to represent their constituents. I know up until the Obama era, there were many black people that didn't want nothing to do with it. I ain't dealing with that stuff. I don't care nothing about politics. I'm trying to get my money. And Oprah told the black community that the only color that matters at this point is green. She told us black don't mean nothing. If you black with money, then you got it made. And so black people, after being from the all the way from the Reconstruction era, all the way up to the Civil Rights Movement, you know, being engaged with politics, having a block vote, voting our interest instead of voting for personalities, we was like, oh, we ain't worried about politics. And we had some irresponsible leaders come tell black folks, don't vote. The vote don't mean nothing. And so you had this whole new class of black apolitical, politically retarded. And by politically retarded, they didn't understand anything about governance, politics, policy, bureaucracy. And all of a sudden, they were all fully invested in politics. They were all had opinions and positions on politics out of nowhere. And we're going to argue you down and the kind of people that will brush you off when you're trying to tell them about governmental stats. They want to tell you about NBA or NFL stats. They wanted nothing. And all of a sudden, they all became Obamaites and they all cared about the vote and they all cared about who was in the White House, and they all cared about supporting our president. So it was a traumatic time. That's what I'm trying to tell you. A lot of black conscious people, a lot of black politically engaged, politically active people, principled people who stood against Obama, who tried to continually inform the community of Obama's ongoing treason to his primary constituency, which is the black vote. To say that Obama didn't represent us, Obama didn't act in our interest, and ultimately we found out Obama had utter contempt for the black masses. That Obama was a classist, he represented his class, so if you were a black member of the 1%, if you were Jay-Z or Beyonce or Will and Jada Pinkett Smith, then Obama was cool with you. But for us unwashed black masses, working class, middle class, lower class, no class, black, no account, black folks, Obama had nothing but contempt for us. Obama implemented no policies in our interest. In fact, Obama sustained policies that were against our interest. And then when we talk to those same people, they tear us down. And we were used to enjoying after Bush was in office. And then Bill Clinton was in office, and the first Bush was in office, and Ronnie Reagan was in office. We enjoyed a solid block of time where we'd be like, yeah, the White House, and black people like, yeah, the White House is the rock house. Uncle Sam is the pusher man. Yeah, we ain't got nothing. The president ain't nothing. So we had this comfortable time that all of our critiques, our criticisms, our teardowns of Washington, D.C., the Congress, and the executive branch, and since Clarence Thomas ascended to the Supreme Court, we were very comfortable. We could shoot down and criticize and write about the White House, and our people were like, yeah, go, yeah, and give us a pat on the back or a pat on our heads and say, yeah, you know, tell it, yeah, Bill Clinton, he ain't for us, Bill Clinton in the drug war and that. But then, after a comfortable time of being able to freely express our discontent, our hostility, our very will to subvert the federal government, all of a sudden, the same people that were either indifferent, didn't give a damn, or people who were cheering us on started to attack us. Started waving the flag. They became patriotic, loyal Americans. They started advocating U.S. imperialism. Yeah, cheering Obama. The same people, some of the same people that were outraged when Ronald Reagan bombed Libya and killed Gaddafi's adopted children, killed Gaddafi's offspring, killed countless Libyans, disrupted Libya, put harsh illegal sanctions on Libya. Black folks were outraged back in the 80s. And some of the same people that were around then were like, yeah, Obama, if Obama's bombing him, then you deserve to get bombed because Obama's such a good-hearted man. So through all that trauma, 8 years, really 10 years of this trauma, a lot of black people coming on, exiting the Obama era into the Trump era, they were traumatized. And many of those black people, like Glenn Ford, I have to say names here, are the public figures. Many of these conscious black people are falling into proto-fascism. Because now they think a defeat of Hillary, meaning that if I'm against Hillary, I got to at least be flirtatious with the Republicans. And if I'm not a Republican, I have to show some level of support for Republican agenda. And you got black people running around here saying no collusion, no collusion. And Trump is helping us because 20 years ago, Dr. Claude Anderson said the immigrants are going to come here and eat our lunch while he was advancing his Powernomics program. And he said immigration was a threat to the black community. And like Boots Riley said, the crack that did the damage was the one from the whip. The immigration that does the damage to us is immigration from Europe, pilgrims, Quakers, British East India Company. That's the immigration y'all need to, but I digress. So there's a lot of black people that have this not open endorsement of Trump, open embracing of Trump, but a lot of black people are a little hesitant to go in on Trump because you spent 8 years going in. And then once you're a pariah, you kind of become used to being a pariah. And you feel like if I have an opinion or if I take a position that is supported by the masses, then I must be wrong. Because generally, the masses and I diverge. So everybody loves Obama. Everybody wanted Hillary to ascend to the throne. And I, for 2006 to 2016, I was the pariah. But then Trump gets elected, and now everybody hates the president. So I can't hate the president because I'm so used to being a pariah. I'm so used to being on the outside. Then if everybody hates Trump, I have to at least have this flirtation with Trump, trying to rationalize his immigration policy, pretending as though Trump's immigration policies will somehow translate into opportunity for black people. I have to pretend that Trump's Trump's ban, Muslim ban, will somehow translate, and you got black people trying to tie the Muslim ban to, well, the Arabs got stores in the black community. As if that will create some type of economic renaissance in the black community, even though half the countries that are banned are in Africa. So you have a lot of black people, conscious, revolutionary black people that are so accustomed, because the black community came down so hard on us when we said Obama is a Zionist, Obama is an imperialist, Obama is representing the interests of the elites and the oligarchs and disregarding the interests of black folks, Obama's fighting harder for the people who tried to eject him for office than he's fighting for the people who put him in office, Obama refuses to stand against our enemy, Obama's going to have a racist white cop who disrespected an Uncle Tom and dragged a black man off his own porch of his own house because he's arrested a black man for trying to break into his own house, and Obama's going to have a beer summit. And then when Obama did want to deal with issues related to the black community, struggles of the black community, he'd bring rappers to the White House and basketball players in the White House instead of black political scientists, black policy experts, black researchers, black psychologists. There were no real black scholars that Obama had an open working relationship with, and he'd bring up treasonous black people that had already shown that they not down with us from when they worked with the Clinton administration. When we pointed this out, our people attacked us, beat us down. So we so used to being beat down, so now you got black people, yeah, you know, Trump could build a wall, there ain't no collusion, and there's no proof behind this Russian stuff. And I find a lot of black people directly and indirectly going hard in the paint on behalf of Donald J. Trump. What the hell? It's okay if your opinions, your positions, your outlook lines up with the masses from time to time. Sometimes the masses is right. They were wrong for loving Obama. The masses were wrong for that. But the masses are absolutely right for hating Trump. And if you at the very least acknowledge that they're right for hating Trump, then you can say, well, the solution to hating Trump is not reelecting Democrats. The Democrats are not the solution for Trump. In fact, the Democrats played a great role in creating the fertile ground for Trump to emerge. The Democrats passed NAFTA, GATT. The Democrats were trying to push through the TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership. The Democrats are mass incarcerators, who are more effective mass incarcerators than the Republicans. So don't let your legitimate hostility, hatred, rejection of the Democratic Party provoke you to have illegitimate support or tacit support or indifference to the Republicans. You should bang on Trump as hard as you banged on Obama. And I know this sounds crazy to some people, like, what, who, there are, yes, I'm telling you, maybe you ain't out there in the trenches like I am. And one of the main sources of this, you know, Glenn Ford, when Obama was in office, Glenn Ford said, you know, it was really hard for me to be hated by my people. A lot of people that I loved, that I looked up to, that I trusted, a lot of organizations came out and endorsed Obama. And Glenn Ford said, I even had to give Obama the benefit of the doubt. Even though I saw the writing on the wall, I'm like, I'm just going to hope against hope. I'm going to even vote against my own basic analysis and common sense. And he's like, but, you know, I'm a allow Obama. I'm not going to anticipate Obama's betrayal. I'm going to approach this as if Obama is truly about hope and change. But the moment Obama demonstrated he self-exposed his betrayal, Glenn Ford said that Obama is not the lesser of two evils. He's the most effective of two evils. He's a more effective evil, not a lesser evil. And Glenn Ford was out there. I give him credit. The Black Agenda Report was out there, banging on Obama, letting the people know Obama ain't with us. Every brother ain't a brother. But now this Trump regime comes up, and I don't hear the same cogent criticism. It seems like they're apologists. They got people on that show making excuses, talking about Trump is a transformative leader. What? I've even had people come at me, because I say, yeah, Hillary illegally won the primary. She was defrauded defrauded Bernie Sanders out of the Democratic primary victory. The evidence is there. But then there's also evidence that she was defrauded out of the presidential victory. Now, I've got no tears to shed for Hillary Rodham Clinton. No tears to shed, no sympathy. I didn't vote for her, didn't vote for her husband, would never vote for a Clinton, not going to vote for Chelsea. Like I said, the Clinton political plague, ain't we just gone through phase two is already in cultivation. Chelsea Clinton, their daughter, is already out there trying to see. She might go Congress. You know, she might get a high level cabinet appointment. Who knows? But eventually, for some reason, Hillary think that her loins, if her legacy, if she couldn't be the first woman pregnancy, then her loins will birth the first. But Chelsea is coming, and she's worse than her mother. If there is a way to be worse than Hillary Clinton, then she gonna be it. But people are suggesting that I was a Hillary supporter because I was vocal against Trump, that I acknowledged that the Republicans engage in massive election fraud, not voter fraud. While they got us talking about they want to examine voter fraud with interstate cross-check, they want to eliminate saying individual voter fraud is when I go to the polls and I vote twice. Voter fraud is when I am not properly registered to vote or I'm registered to vote in several states. Voter fraud is an individual, me, the voter, engaging in fraud. Fraudulent elections. That's voter fraud, which is less than 1%. It is a statistical anomaly. It never happens. It has never, voter fraud has never moved a national election. That's not the issue, but that's all the Republicans talk about. The real issue in U.S. election is election fraud. Election fraud is when those who oversee the election get engaged, when the secretaries of state, when the owners of the electronic voting machines, when the governor is kicking people off of voter rolls and calling people felons when they aren't, and disenfranchising whole swaths of people. When the paper ballots come up missing, that's election fraud. When the administrators of the election engage in fraud, or across, and so a voter, I can vote 10, 20 times. That's voter fraud. Election fraud is when I can erase 100, 250,000 votes. When I can gerrymander and redistrict an area to make it so that it is where I can crack or pack a Democratic population, where I can condense them into a small group or break them up into a dilute them amongst Republicans so that there can be, even though the Democrat has a majority of votes, the Republican will take. So the Republicans have been governing from the minority since the Reagan era. There hasn't been a Republican president that has ascended to the White House without massive election fraud since Dwight D. Eisenhower in the 50s. Reagan got in through election fraud. What's his name? Dukakis versus the first Bush. Election fraud. Bush 2.0. Election fraud. We all know this. And the Democrats are afraid to say anything for a couple of reasons. The Democrats have the same funders as the Republicans. And one thing neither party wants to do is upset its base. And this funding base, not his voting base. And another thing is, up until the Roosevelt administration, the Democrats were the ones stealing the votes because the Republicans had a natural plurality. And that turned with the FDR administration. And now the Democrats have a natural plurality. So the only way Republicans can win is through massive fraud. But fortunately, they're damn good at it. And now with these new algorithms, there's this book. Oh, and we're going to FM eventually. And so I'll be on the FM station. They got certifications up here for FCC, Federal Communications Commission, grant of equipment authorization. And then there's this crude list of words I can't say on the air, which I'm going to have to talk to management. Somebody threw this together right quick. I don't know if y'all could see this. These words I'm not supposed to say. The B word. I can't say slut on the air. Really? I can't say piss or tits. Okay, now some of these words, I understand. I can't say. I'm going to have to talk to management. I'm not really in good standing right now, but we're not getting good in standing. I'm going to have to holler at management. Anyway, so I want to give the conscious community, the politically aware, political radical, the political commentator, it's okay to bang on Trump. It's okay to criticize Trump. It's okay to be anti-Trump. That does not make you automatically pro-Hillary. You can hate both of them. They're both the scum of the earth. They both have insidious agendas. And I agree. Hillary would have been a lot more effective at her insidious achieving her insidious agenda because she wouldn't have faced as much opposition as Trump is generating. Trump is shooting himself in his own foot. Trump is an idiot. Hillary is very cunning. They're both evil. And you don't have to. And I know we have a slight victory. We avoided the fire with Hillary, but we're still in the middle of the damn frying pan with Trump. So I don't like all of this Trump apologist, Trump making excuses for Trump or being indifferent for Trump. I don't like all these black people walking around talking about, oh, you really think the Russians, you're Russians, all that Russian, blah, blah, blah. Now, listen, Fox News, if you ain't on Fox News payroll, shut your ass up about what the Russians did ain't done. Man, oh, this clown colluded with the damn Russians. He did it. Come on now. Russian oligarchs have been floating Trump for the last decade. Trump is a crook. He's a con man. If Trump, I once had a white boy tell me, I worked in Raytown, Missouri. And he said, boy, if you had done, he didn't say boy, this is my own rendition of it. But he said, if you had done the things that I'd done, you'd be in jail for life. And I'm out here walking free. And I'm like, duh, tell me something I don't know. Don't think you blowing my mind. I know better than you do. And you know, daggum, doggone, stinking well, if Obama had engaged in 1/100 of the improprieties that Trump, and you can admit it, it's okay. That doesn't make you an Obama supporter. That just makes you somebody who has an intimate and well-working relationship with reality. If Obama had engaged in one fraction, if there were pictures out here floating of Michelle Obama with her stuff all broke out, bustled, if it was Obama, if there was pictures of Michelle Obama, you know, all laid up in an intimate fashion with some other meth whore, like there are pictures of Melania tripping with a meth whore, you know, poom poom all bust out, breast all bust out. If those same pictures existed that are of that mail order bride, that whore who has sex for money, if anybody, holla at me, if you truly believe that Melania is with Trump for any other reason than he pays her, like he paid Stormy Daniels and he paid that other porn star, like he paid Marla Maples, like he paid Ivanka, I don't think Trump has ever had intercourse that he didn't pay for. I'm not anti-whore, but I'm anti-class treason. So Melania don't represent her set. She's a whore, and she ain't representing for other whores. So I respect whores, but I don't respect treasonous whores who betray their own kind. You should be out here advocating for Stormy Daniels. You should be out here advocating for immigrants who come to America to have anchor babies. Because Melania, your son is an anchor baby. Barron Trump is a damn anchor baby. You can't even get your Yankee Doodle accent together. And we know damn well if those same pictures existed of Michelle, the Republicans would have those. There wouldn't be a day that go by that those images weren't jammed in your face. They would be plastered everywhere. Rednecks would be marching with their machine guns and pictures of Michelle Obama, buck naked. In fact, they couldn't do that, so they would take Michelle Obama's head and Photoshop it onto to naked women, and Photoshop Michelle Obama's head onto chimpanzees and gorillas. That's what they would do. You don't even got to know how to work Photoshop. You can go straight to the internet and pull down Melania's slackness. So we know there's a double standard. We can talk about it, and that doesn't make you a Hillary or an Obama supporter. That makes you a reality supporter. Stop it. Glenn Ford, Black Agenda Report, all you other black folks, stop with this tacit flirtation. Stop giving Trump a pass. Start telling the people. Start going in on Trump as hard as you went in, harder than you went in on Obama. It's okay that you should look forward to, I know what it's like to have positions, views. Oh, I got a caller. Caller, you're on the Bro Diallo Show. State your name or alias and where you're calling from.
This is Adolfo, but calling from Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh, what's up, bro?
Yeah, I'm trying to understand what are you saying about the Black Agenda Report and Glenn Ford now. Because I hadn't heard them praising Trump, but
no.
they have condemned him from what I've heard. I think they just have contextual certain people on there, particularly what I listened to, Anthony Monturo, initially when I was listening to him in his commentary like the other week. Some of the things he was saying about Trump was kind of throwing me off for a minute, but when he contextualized it, after Glenn Fuller asked some follow-up questions, it helped me understand what he was saying better. He was talking about how Trump was upsetting the ruling class order by some of the, his stances, his kind of talk, this ultra reactionary stuff about places like North Korea and Russia, talking about he gonna blow them up, but then he'll go down and sit with these people and talk to them and have civil discussions, as far as we know. Whereas other Democratic presidents and Republican presidents in the past, they have not been willing to do that. And this is what he was saying is not good for this the normal ruling class, and Trump is upsetting that. That's the only thing I've heard on there that they've been praising or could be construed as praising. So I wanted to get an understanding of what you meant when you're saying that.
Okay. What we are both talking about, and this is also the report that I'm talking about as well, Black Agenda Report with Glenn Ford interviewed
right.
on July 16th, 2018. Montero said,
right.
came on, and the title of the show on the Black Agenda Report website, it says, Trump, most pro-peace president since JFK. Number one, I listened to that interview, and I was dumbfounded. Montero was saying some poppycock nonsense. And Glenn Ford, who is generally one of the most striking political commentators and interviews, don't let nothing pass, was giving this dude a platform to spew some of the most baseless, non-contextual political nonsense I've heard since the last time I tuned into right-wing Fox News or right-wing radio. And hell, you know, I could play the interview, but Glenn Ford, to give
talking about how racist he was in terms of his domestic policy.
See, here's the thing. I'm going to have to play the interview for the people. Glenn Ford. Now, I don't know if you've listened to Glenn Ford other interviews. I'm saying the overall conclusion that Trump is talking to North Korea due to talking about peace and meeting with Putin based on peace, when you look at when he went there, what the media showed, let alone because there were several closed-door sessions, Trump went to Kim Jong-un and says, listen, you got a suppressed, starving population. You basically have a nation of slaves, and you can bring manufacturing here because now places like Indonesia, Haiti, China, they're basically like, listen, we got to have some level of rights for our workers. We got to have some level of pollution controls for our workers. And so Trump went to Kim Jong-un and was like, I don't care about all that nuclear, man. I don't care about none of that. You can bomb the hell out of South Korea or China, but let's get this money, player. I'm shady, you get shady. Dress up like ladies and burn them with dirty 380s. He was over there on some gangster-ish. He was not over there to negotiate peace. He was not over there to reunite the Korean Peninsula. He was over there to get that money. And it's easier under capitalism to get money with tyrants. So Kim Jong-un, Duterte, and Philippines. Also, you'll look at places like Venezuela. If you look at Honduras, Trump is engaged in as much, if not more, aggressive acts of warfare. Man, he's just saying, I want to forget trying to deal with these fake democracies. I want to deal with real dictatorships. So it was not a movement of peace. And I think that Glenn Ford understands that. And he should have told the people that. You can't come on my show talking about Trump went to North Korea to negotiate peace, that Trump is having summits with Putin in order to negotiate peace. In fact, when at the Putin-Trump summit, there was a journalist there that was talking about nuclear non-proliferation. He wanted to come there to discuss the nuclear test ban treaty and actual real peace issues, and he was literally dragged out of the press conference and thrown in jail. And they kept him in jail till the summit was over and never even charged him with a crime in Helsinki. Trump ain't spreading peace. He's spreading capitalism, and he's doing it more aggressively. And the only reason he hasn't been impeached and imprisoned is because the economic elite, and Trump goes on the air and says it all the time, Wall Street loves me. They talk about me in public, but they love me behind doors. The CEO of, what was it, MSNBC said Trump is bad for America, but he's great for business. So Trump is not pro-peace. Glenn Ford did not, from my point of view, and I'll play it so the people can have their own, but I don't even like playing this kind of dribble trash. I was surprised to see it on Black Agenda Report. I'm not even comfortable. I'll post a link to it on social media. I'm not going to play it on the air because it's utter pro-Trump propaganda. And Glenn Ford, as hard as he went on Obama, saying Obama was not the lesser evil, the more effective evil, and he was like, yeah, we do have issues with Trump. Come on, man. You got to admit that he ain't going on in on Trump like he went in on Obama. Come on.
Yeah, I could say I can admit that. I don't think he went as, from what I've heard, he hasn't gone as hard on Trump as he had on Obama.
And then they stay talking about the Russia issue. They stay trying to deflect the Russia issue. Oh, the Democrats better give up on this Russia thing or it's over. And Russiagate, they're anti-Russiagate when you know damn well the world powers all do the dirt. And it makes as much sense to say that Russia didn't interfere in U.S. election as it to say as U.S. didn't interfere in Russian election or Haitian elections or Honduran elections or Ukrainian elections or U.K. elections. They did interfere in the election. And then Putin goes on the stage to say, yeah, you know, there were some hackers that maybe did hack. They hacked the DNC and the RNC, but they only released the DNC dirt and they held back the RNC dirt. And I never would say that Russia gave the election to Trump. That's not my assertion. But there was massive election fraud. Where is he talking about the massive election fraud? And now, in order to get the dirt on Trump, we got to go to white journalists because the Black Agenda part, they're softballing it. Go back and look at their coverage of the Obama administration versus their coverage of the Trump administration. And they only admit, and then they admit, yeah, Trump is racist. Yeah, we got to admit to some things because Trump is just so obvious with it. But they don't go. They don't articulate. It's the Black Agenda Report. And the Black Agenda, if the Black Agenda ain't to be in principled and practical opposition to Trump, what else could the Black Agenda be?
Well, I think they are in opposition to Trump. Now, I agree with you that they're not going as hard as they were on Obama. But I think many people, they had a special type of vitriol for Obama because just the dash hopes that he represented. Many people just put so much into him, so much they thought that he was going to do this or he was going to bring hope and change. And once they realized the jig was up, but people like, you pointed out Glenn Ford, they knew better from the start. So
they knew
that's
better
really
from
no
the start.
Excuse for them.
Exactly.
So I really can't say it.
And like I said, there's a lot of Black people, like a lot of the Powernomics people, that the followers of the of Black capitalist Powernomics, Dr. Claude Anderson, a lot of the DOS, descendants of slaves, there's a large segment of, I'm not even talking about the Black masses, because in this issue, I'm on the side with the Black masses, and I don't often get an opportunity to side with the Black masses. So I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to huddle up with the millions of Black people that are like, yeah, F Donald Trump. you know, or that song, F Donald Trump. And even if their analysis don't go any deeper than that, it's good to be able to huddle up with your people from time to time. But that's the masses. But there's another distinct segment, another distinct demographic of politically conscious, politically engaged black people, Yvette's people, Dr. Claude Anderson people, the Black Agenda Report people, who just are not comfortable being with the masses. Like, if you're with the masses, then you're obviously just dumb because the masses are dumb. And so if the masses are...
Do you
love
think that's what it is, though?
I don't know what it is, because I didn't I have the opportunity. I'd have homie on the show to talk about it if I could get him. But I don't know what it is. I'm speculating. Like I said, maybe that's it. It's just a conditioned response. If everybody going that way, I'm going this way. I've even had that behavior in myself. You know, being a vegan, atheist, pan-African, socialist, I'm very used to everybody going that way and me having to go my own, this way, being in the black minority within minority. I'm used to that. And some people get so wrapped up and that's their identity. I don't go with the masses. I don't do what the masses do. That even when the masses are doing right, I'm going to end up doing wrong just by my reflex. I'm speculating that that's it. I don't know what it is.
Right. Right.
And they and why is Black Agenda Report going so hard against Russiagate? How is it in the black community's interest to fully legitimize Trump's presidency? How
well,
is that part of the
thing is they are criticizing the Democrats for beating the drum on this while ignoring other issues that they should be addressing. They not addressing nothing. That's all they own is this Russiagate.
That's what I'm
they own Russiagate while they selling us out.
Exactly.
They've been selling us out for 30 years. Now they want to talk about Russiagate, and that's all they want to talk about.
But what that got to do?
Being accountable and doing something for your people.
I'm talking about Black Agenda Report. I'm not talking about the Congressional Black Caucus.
No. But that's what I'm saying. That's right. That's the context. I'm saying that they put in this Russiagate thing, and they saying the Democrats own Russiagate, but it's the hypocritical kind of thing because of their own actions. But I guess it don't matter because they right on the Russiagate thing.
I don't know.
Maybe people
I don't think they're right on Russiagate.
I
don't think right now the most resistant, if you go to the July 23rd, 2018, Black Agenda Report website, they have a lead story. Russiagate is a historical farce.
Oh, yeah, I was just listening to that.
It is not a historical farce.
There was some white dude wrote a book about that or something.
Right. And they call in Russiagate McCarthy, the new McCarthyism. And I don't know if they just want to be historically dishonest. Russiagate is not McCarthyism. McCarthyism was, do we really have to recount what happened during McCarthyism? How many people have been brought before, ostracized, investigated, lost their livelihood, audited, had their wealth and livelihood stripped away from them behind this Russiagate thing? Russiagate is not McCarthyism, and it's disrespect to history. It's just historically dishonest. And again, why is it Black Agenda's report to dispel Russiagate? What the hell? This is the Black Agenda report, not the Trump Agenda report. Why is Black Agenda report banging so hard on trying to legitimize Trump's presidency? Because to be honest with you, Trump is a criminal. Trump did collude with the Russians.
Yeah.
I got people coming to me, you mean to tell me the Russians turned the election? No. But here's the thing. Do you know how many black people are locked up for conspiracy, never carrying out whatever they conspired to do? So just because I say there's evidence of the Russia, of Trump colluding with the Russians, does not mean what they colluded to do was successful. If you and I sat down to conspire and to do a drug deal, to get some drugs, to cut the drugs and distribute the drugs, and we're on tape discussing this, that's enough to bring charges against us. Maybe not a conviction. That's enough for an indictment, at least, is it not? Can we be brought up on conspiracy? And I know it's black men in jail right now who didn't have one bomb, didn't have one Molotov cocktail, didn't have one pistol, and talked about blowing up a synagogue in the name of Allah. And they threw them cats under the jail. Them poor, illiterate dudes in New Jersey. For talking, for conspiring, for colluding together to blow up a mosque, even though they didn't have the means, the material, or even a real motive to do it. And they still convicted those brothers. So collusion does not mean you carried out what you colluded to do. And the president doesn't have to commit a crime, high crime or misdemeanor. Come on, man. If you go back to the Trump administration, to the Obama administration, you'll find nobody sharing more Black Agenda Report, advocating, pushing people to go listen to Glenn Ford's analysis of Obama's policy. Now, I couldn't say with confidence.
I'm just trying to get a deep understanding. I'm not condemning you or your analysis. I'm just trying to, because to be honest, when I was listening to that Anthony Montero thing, I'm like, what is he saying? Like, he just sounded off.
He was off. He is full of crap. And Glenn Ford didn't go at his head like he should have. I just had somebody say, because I was interviewing a feminist on the show. And a brother came to me and was like, man, you had that feminist on there talking some crazy stuff and you didn't go at her hard enough. And I'm like, I'll have to review the interview. You know, I said, I don't bring people on my show in anticipation of antagonism. But if somebody comes on my show, I will call them on their bull. Because what's the point in being here? Like, I invited
Anthony Montero, that boy, well, his boy particularly, because he went at Malefia Sante, which he should have went at Malefia Sante when he did. Like that, they was calling Malefia Sante all kind of rats and dashiki wearing N-words and all this kind of stuff. So that's their boy, man. So that don't make it right now. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm just saying that's the context for it probably, why they not going at his head like that. That's their boy. But I'm going to ask Bruce Dixon about it because I've been
Bruce gets on me.
Bruce didn't say it.
Bruce stays on me too, because me and Bruce then had a couple of, if you could call it, conversations, so a couple of engagements on some issues, especially related to this. But I think I suspect, again, based on my observations and the evidence that I have available to me, that this could be, because I know some brothers that get so deep in their identity going against the grain, that even when the grain is the right way to go, they still feel like that's just their identity. I'm never with the people. So Black Agenda Report, I still think they're valid, but on this Trump Russiagate and Trump issue, I think they got attacked so hard. They were so demonized for their principled opposition to Trump, to Obama, that they don't know how to reverse course. Hillary's gone. I'm glad Hillary lost. Right. I would have never voted for Hillary, but I would never even indirectly or tacitly endorse the Trump administration or either. I'm glad Hillary lost. I'm outraged that Trump won. You know, we don't have to pick a side. You know.
Right.
And I, like he said about Obama, Obama is the more effective evil. And has he said that? I still respect Glenn Ford, but I got questions, man. And that Montero interview was irresponsible to put that out. I don't think that reflected. It should not be the Black agenda to promote Trump as the most peace president, most pro-peace president since JFK, especially now that we know. I don't know if they're playing with the words, because JFK was a warmonger. He was one of the most pro-nuclear war, most aggressive. He wanted to kill everybody. He wanted to bomb the Congo. Kennedy wasn't pro-peace. He was anti-getting nuked. He was anti-nuclear war. But being anti-nukes don't mean you're pro-peace. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. Sometimes people, they be getting into trying to make these kind of edgy arguments. They just end up saying some nonsense trying to be, I don't know what they be trying to do, but these academics sometimes, man, they be going off the deep end with some of their arguments, trying to be cutting edge in their analysis. I guess that's what they call it, but yeah, well, I agree with you on that.
Yeah, and holler at Bruce Dixon.
But yeah, I've been thinking about it. I have been thinking about this whole thing, what I was going to say, because somebody invited me on a radio show here in Jackson. They were saying that they want to talk about Trump. And generally, Trump is a scumbag. He's a scumbag. Yeah. Everybody know that. He's a scumbag.
Yes.
So I don't know, man. But I think it got to be – when we talk about Trump, I don't think that we can – that we should decontextualize Trump and not talk about how Trump got there.
Right.
Being the role of Obama played in and all of these the Democratic Party, we got to contextualize all that. But many of our people don't be wanting to hear that.
Right.
They be getting mad. They talk, no, we talking about Trump now and this, this, and that. But
yeah,
you can't talk about that out of context.
But here's the thing. You got to fight on all fronts. And so I know the black people's psychosis and psychopathic love affair with the Democratic Party makes it does not give relieve us of our responsibility to call out the treason and the high crimes. And I don't even talking about treason against the United States. I'm talking about treason against us. There's a lot of black Democrats, but there's also a few black Republicans, too. And we don't even know their names.
Yeah, you're right about
and
that.
And so now that the now that the Republicans control the Congress, they control the executive branch, and they have a majority on the Supreme Court, we can talk about the Democrats, but the Democrats are the opposition party. So we need to be dynamic enough in our analysis and dynamic enough in our activism that we can pivot. This is political guerrilla warfare, and the core of warfare is being dynamic. Not being stringent. Okay, I stand. I'm against the Democrats. I'm a diss the Democrats. But now the Democrats have been removed from all official seats of power in the federal government. So when you want to criticize the Democrat, you got to come back. Like, I'm all for it. We got a Democratic legislator here in the state of Illinois. We got a Democratic city council. We have a Democratic mayor. So if you want to bang on the Democrats on the city or state level, I'm there. But when you go up to national politics, to federal politics, you got to flip and go in on the Republicans. And as soon as the Republicans, and I'm not saying drop your Democratic analysis, but you have to enhance your Republican analysis.
Right.
Because you only thing you can criticize about the Maxine Waters is that is she effectively opposing the Republicans or ineffectively opposing the Republicans? Where do they align? Where do they diverge? But let me tell you something. Maxine Waters is not writing legislation or advancing policy right now. She's not in a position to. That's why she's out here crying and kicking. We ain't heard from Maxine Waters. She's been in Congress over 30 years, and now all of a sudden, why is she up front? Because she's kicking and crying and throwing tantrums. But I'm telling you, Maxine Waters' tantrums are not advancing policies. It's the Republicans that are writing policy right now, that public policy that are imposed. It is Republicans that is deciding how the revenues and the budget will be distributed amongst the masses. So we need to be able to say, okay, it's time to go in. And don't just assume, oh, black people already know the Republicans are bad. Because in this era, I can't say that anymore. Especially when the black radicals are like, oh, and we got people like Yvette talking about how his immigration policies are helping us. How his Muslim bans are helping us. How Trump's going overseas to create peace. Trump's real agenda is to turn the United States into a third world economy. Because third world economies make better. Having no middle class. Powerless workers, no environmental policies, and utter absolute rule of the oligarchs. That's his agenda. And that's what he wants in North Korea. And Putin has that. Putin is not a communist. Putin is anti-communist. Putin has criticized. Right. He's the one who oversaw the teardown of all. And so there are also a lot of old school black activists that still think that, you know, there's some remnants of the USSR. Some anti-imperialist communism going on in Russia. That residue is gone. It's over. That era is over in Russia. The Soviet Union is done. So there's a lot of layers here. But I can't sit here and talk about the people that I'm in opposition to, and then when I see the people that I stand in solidarity with, like Glenn Ford and Black Agenda Report, and then I'm supposed to shade over that? I'm supposed to gloss over that?
Nah.
So I do like Del Jones said, because he didn't let nothing slide. This is criticism with affection.
Right.
But if we don't call our own people out, what we look like trying to call out our opposition? And I will share it. I will share it on my page, this disturbing interview, and you and the public can decide whether or not they think Glenn Ford is promoting some really toxic concepts to the public.
Right.
I ain't gonna share it right now because I'm gonna have to put some commentary with it because this is really, I mean, you can't take this interview at face value. That dude is talking mad crap. But you can go to Black Agenda Report if you're listening. Don't go until 9 o'clock. Don't go now. But you can go. The July 16th, 2018 is still on their homepage. And the title is Monteiro, Trump, most peace, pro-peace president since JFK. That's the title of the article. And they call him a Du Boisian scholar. Boy. Dr. Man. Anthony Monteiro is a Du Boisian scholar. And said that Trump is bringing peace to the world.
Yeah, he off base.
And so was Glenn Ford. You know, that sister that just wrote that book on interracial relationships, encouraging black women to pursue white men, marriage, relationship, and procreation with white men, I invited her onto the show. And for an interview. You know, she published a book. She obviously has some ideas she wants to get out to the people. And she responded to me that she wouldn't come on the show unless I sent her pre-written questions. And I don't do that. This ain't the DNC. I don't send you questions ahead of time. You know? And so I'm like, I can't have her on. So I'm not even against having people on that I don't totally agree with. You know what I'm saying? But when you come on, you're going to have to deal. You're going to get called on the carpet. You're going to have to really be able to not only just articulate your positions, but be able to defend your positions and justify your positions. So I don't play those kind of media games. I want somebody with a name for controversy, have them on the show, but I'm going to give them the questions ahead of time. So this is not really honest dialogue. It's a rehearsed, pre-planned performance. And this is not a performance show.
Right. But I don't never understand that about people. If they got out, even on social media, they'll say some nonsense, and then you'll question them about it. Then they'll talk about, oh, I don't do this kind of thing on social media. But you putting ideas out on social media, then shut your mouth then.
Exactly.
If you're not going to back up your ideas, what are you talking about?
This is
a public forum. You putting out foolishness and somebody challenge you on it with a question. You don't want to articulate it?
Right.
What are you talking for then?
I literally work for the people. So I can't, you know, and my basic obligation, I might not be able to say stuff you agree with, but I can say at least, you know, it's evidence and research based what I'm talking, what I'm sharing on here. So you might not agree with it, but you know, at least I can give you the references to go and check it.
When
I'm talking my own opinion, my speculation, I'm quick to say this is my opinion or my speculation, versus when I'm telling the documented facts, you know, the confirmed reality, then I'm gonna say that too.
Right.
So, you know.
But man,
I know you're part of.
Be able to defend our ideas, then she won't pre-screen questions or whatever you call it.
You know, and I'm like, you're gonna put it in a book, but you won't defend it in public. You know, you're gonna hide behind your academic walls. I'm gonna have to find that email. I should probably share that.
Probably indefensible. She probably knows what she wrote is indefensible.
If she don't know it, that's her behavior. You know, stupid is as stupid does. I mean, she was the first person. Usually when I invite people on the show and they feel like, I can't go on this guy's show because, you know, I know our ideas don't align or whatever, they just say no outright. I've never had anybody ask me to send them a list of questions and then request that, you know, I don't go off script. And I've had people on the show. You know, I've had Black Hebrew Israelite on the show. I had East Coast progressive liberals on the show. I've had people on the show that I don't see eye to eye with. You know.
You know, this just go into this whole culture of people not wanting to engage in ideological struggle and deal with all this liberalism, man.
Oh, here's
people don't want to combat liberalism, and they don't want to engage in ideological struggle.
Right.
They don't want to feel uncomfortable. They don't want their idea questioned or interrogated.
Right.
So,
because it's not their ideas. It's ideas that you know what? But the woman's name is called "Black Women and White Men: Interracial Marriages Between Black Women and White Men" by this academic. Her name is Cheryl Y. Judas. Judas. Wow. J-U-D-I-C-E.
Judas. What?
It's J-U-D-I-C-E. Judas. Cheryl Y. Judas. I hope that's. But I said, you know, I host a local radio show. You know she's here in Chicago. I host a local radio show, Q4, that converses issues related to the black community. I would like to interview you about your book, Interracial Relationships. She said, before I can consent to being on your radio program, I need the list of interview questions you would have for me. Once I review them, I can make a decision. So that was the end of that. But that's how people. So I'm just saying, Glenn Ford is one of my role models, especially in media and analysis.
Right.
And so for him to agree to have a dude, before I bring somebody on the air that's going to spew toxic nonsense to the community, believe you me, I'm not going to capitulate to any of their nonsense, and I'm going to challenge them, and I'm not going to give them any. I'm not going to give them any leeway or reprieve or retreat, or else I'm not going to allow you to come out to the public. And you know how much her book is selling for? For this book?
How much?
$95, and there's only one copy left online. On Kindle, it's $50, and she's selling this book. I mean, sisters is like, yo. Anyway. I got to move on to the next topic because, in fact, that's a good segue because I'm going to talk about whether or not races can be reformed in interracial relationships. Maybe you should stay on. I know, you know, aren't you in a married to a white woman? So I want to get the voice.
Man, don't play with me. man, bye, man. I'll talk to you later, man.
All right, bro. Oh, you see the new logos for the book club and the Nubians for Literacy?
Yeah, I did.
Nice,
I thought that first one was nice, but I thought it should have some green. Maybe those books should be green instead of white.
I thought you said bling.
Nah, green, green.
All right, but then let Chuck know. Chuck is a professional. He's not sensitive. If you got some suggestions.
No, I just hadn't gotten around to it. I was going to say something.
All right, yeah, because I just saw him this morning before I went on air. But anyway, we'll talk, bro.
All right, bro.
All right. So we heard from the Glenn Ford.